You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
I have the distinguished honor of presenting the President of the United States.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate and of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas between San Francisco and Honolulu. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense, but always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us.
Says some very telling things right here.
No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory.
Absolute victory. Now we're debating what victory is. What is victory?
I believe that I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us.
So, that was 75 years ago. Very, very, very telling. Very, very striking to hear an American president speak so strongly. We haven't had a strong one in a long time. And what FDR was saying about the severely damaged Pacific Fleet. Of course, when Admiral Yamamoto was going over the end all of the results of the attack. And he wanted to know because everybody was very, very, everybody reporting back to him was very, very excited about what had happened. It had been a stunning victory. They had severely damaged so many ships, and the day was completely won in every sense of the word as far as the attack on Pearl Harbor and as far as, you know, the ratio to American losses and Japanese losses. Stunning victory, they all thought. But Admiral Yamamoto had one question. Where were the American aircraft carriers? Where were they? And even though they were all, they were being, I believe it was the Lexington and the Enterprise and one other out there in the Pacific that were not at Pearl Harbor, which would have been a very, very crippling, that would have been unbelievably crippling. The entire Pacific would be exposed. And it was because of that misstep. It was because of not being able to get to those carriers that Admiral Yamamoto uttered those famous words, "I fear that we may have awakened a sleeping giant." And from there, what do we have? So many Americans went and enlisted into the war effort, one of them being John Glenn, who we're going to be talking about tonight. And of course, you know, whereas this was a rallying cry, it became a rallying cry for all of the members of the Greatest Generation to go out there and fight against the Axis powers and bring some kind of stability back to the world. It was also a real look. It was actually a moment of victory and a moment of celebration for people like Winston Churchill when he heard about it. I believe the quote out of him immediately was, "So we've won after all," because he knew that the war was not going to be won and won decisively until the U.S. was in it. And once he heard that Japan had crossed that line, he knew that there was absolutely nothing standing in the way of World War II, what would become known as World War II, to be won by the Allied forces. Once the American economic, the free market of American, the economic machine, the juggernaut that was the U.S., even though it was spending its way out of a depression, and we can go into what was going on economically and all of the weak spots that FDR had as a leader, especially from a policy perspective. But man, oh man, big time. Big time. I actually have a couple of things here. I wanted to go over, let me see here. What did Winston Churchill say? Let's go right there. Let's go right here. A couple of things I thought was funny. What did Winston Churchill say after he heard the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor? I liked one of the answers. I went to Yahoo, and I liked this answer. "He reacted not with sorrow, but with great relief and even joy. He needed the U.S. formally and officially in the war, not just in helping the Allies on the sidelines." Of course, we know what he was doing what the U.S. was doing on the sidelines with the Lend-Lease Act and everything else. On December 8th, 1941, he wrote in his diary, "I knew the United States was in the war, now up to the neck. So we had won after all." He said, "American blood flows in my views. The United States is like a gigantic boiler. Once the fire is lighted under it, there is no limit to the power it can generate." That's Winston Churchill speaking of the great United States. And we were once great. For sure. Never count out America in that sense. Especially the working class. Never count them out. What we need to be is freed from all this. So one last thing I would say on all that stuff, because, you know, yesterday was the bombing, but I figure we'd save it until today and And we lead with the December 8th speech by FDR, which I think worked out pretty well. And going from there, let's jump into John Glenn. Also, last night, if you have SiriusXM or any kind of, I don't know if David Webb puts all of his broadcasts into a podcast form or whatever, but I was listening to talk radio on SiriusXM last night, and David Webb was live, and he did a great Pearl Harbor 75 broadcast where he was speaking to a lot of survivors. Many of them are in their late 80s and 90s now. There's less than 200 of them still alive. So I'd have to imagine that time is running out on that. So there's some great interviews in last night's broadcast of the David Webb Show. So go check that out. Just really, really enlightening. Really, really enlightening. And fascinating. Just sit back and listen. But let's go on to John Glenn now. What's going on, everybody, in the chat room? I see you all mixing it up. Here's from the New York Times. A few things that we got here. And people like Gadget Doc have memorialized John Glenn very well today. But let's read a little bit about the man, who is really an American hero. Such an American hero in the 60s, throughout the space race, which was an amazing... And that's another thing, too. We talked about with Pearl Harbor 75 and going and listening to David Webb last night. Not everybody has SiriusXM or anything like that, but a lot of people have Netflix. Go on, if you want to give yourself a treat, you can be sober, you can be a little lifted if you want, whatever the hell it is, you're going to enjoy it either way. Especially if you want to get a little bit of a patriotic upwell. Okay, go and get into Netflix and look up the series from CNN called The 60s. I've spoken about it on the show before. So go check out The 60s and just go to watch the Space Race episode. Space Race episode is amazing. Just to really sit back and watch what we were doing and what the competition, how the Russians had beat us to space. You were in the middle of the Cold War. It's capitalism versus communism. It's spreading throughout the world. You know, there was a lot at stake there. It was communism was inching its way into the Western Hemisphere. This is a very, very big, tumultuous time, and we were not winning. You know, we weren't competitive. And to see American ingenuity just rifle past the Russians in a time when they had, at one point, such a big lead on us. And John Glenn was really the beginning of all of that, turning it around. First man in space to orbit the Earth, come back down, and right off the bat, the U.S. was on the map. We were still behind at that point. We were still losing the space race, but we were on the map, and John Glenn gave all the little girls and boys at home in the United States someone to look up to. Fantastic. So please check out The 60s, and it is good. And Stephanie Evil in the chat room says, I didn't watch CNN's 60s because I thought it was going to be more baby boomer nostalgia. I promise you, it's not. I think I might have not still watched one or two episodes, but there's some great stuff in there. The 70s is awesome, too. I've told you guys multiple times on this this podcast, if you're going to watch the 60s or the 70s, on Netflix, the CNN series, Tom Hanks is a part of the production of both of them. If you're going to watch those, A, watch the space race because it's relevant right now, and B, watch episode one of both series. It's the television episodes, just to show you where TV was, television coming of age, and then television really maturing in the 1970s and all the different types of social issues that were taken on and the bravery we had in what we were broadcasting and the types of images we were putting out there in the 70s. So if you're going to binge on anything tonight, I promise you, you are not going to regret those episodes. Episode 1 and 2 of the 60s and 70s, and then also the Space Race episode. I'd watch that first just because it's most pressing right now. You guys taking off? Good to see you guys, man. Be well.
Good to meet you, brother.
See you soon. Come by anytime. All right. So that's what I'll leave you with there. But let's go to the New York Times article. I have two articles on John Glenn tonight, and I'd like to read through both of them. Just because the man deserves a little bit of time in the sun, and he's getting a lot of it. Well-deserved. John Glenn, a freckle-faced son of Ohio, who was hailed as a national... That's the other thing that I didn't realize. Orville and Wilbur Wright were from Ohio. John Glenn and Neil Armstrong from Ohio. So as far as first man on the moon, first man in orbit, in space, and the first men credited with flight in the United States... And I saw in one of the other things, to come out of it, they're talking about how Ohio is really the first in flight. And I know, Gadget Doc, from all of our trips down to South Carolina, I know North Carolina's license plates are first in flight. So I was wondering what you thought about that. Gadget Doc, if you want to call in at some point and let me know what you think about that, about Ohio being dubbed the first in flight, because that's actually where all of the rainmakers and aeronautics came from. So let's continue going with this. Ohio was hailed as a national hero and a symbol of the space age as the first American to orbit Earth, then became a national political figure for 24 years in the Senate. He died on Thursday in Columbus, Ohio. He was 95, surrounded by his family. Ohio State University announced his death. Mr. Glenn had been recently hospitalized. We'll go past that. We don't need to know all this stuff. When you make it to 95, it's just gravy. At that point, however you go out, it's... That's got nothing on you at that point. In just 5 hours, on February 20th, 1962, Mr. Glenn joined a select roster of Americans. Let me start that over again. I love that song. Northern Comfort by The Servant. Or I think it might be the other way around. In just 5 hours, on February 20th, 1962, Mr. Glenn joined a select roster of Americans whose feats have seized the country's imagination and come to embody a moment in its history, figures like Lewis and Clark, the Wright brothers, and Charles Lindbergh. To the America of the 1960s, Mr. Glenn was a clean-cut, good-natured, well-grounded Midwesterner, raised in Presbyterian rectitude, nurtured in patriotism, and tested in war, who stepped forward to risk the unknown and succeeded spectacularly, lifting his country's morale and restoring its self-confidence. And that was, and what you'll see in the space race episode, a huge part of it all. American self-confidence was down. We're losing to the Russians. You know, we're losing to the bad guys. So, it was monumental. And so when you watch that, I implore you to kind of like strip away your modern sensibilities and try to put yourself into that mindset. You know, I remember talking to my mother. Oh, God. I went to my mom because I was so like enamored by this. And I was like, wow. You know, wow, my parents, they lived through the Cuban Missile Crisis. They lived through this. They saw the space race. They were around for John Glenn. They were around for Neil Armstrong. They were around for all this stuff. They were around for the Apollo missions and all that. And I go to my mother, and I'm like, you know, especially when it gets to the Neil Armstrong part of history, I'm like, Mom, what do you know about, like, how was it the night that Neil Armstrong was on? And she said that she actually left home to go to the next door neighbors to watch something because my grandparents wouldn't turn off the news reports on it, tracking the space shuttle that they're getting to the moon, they're touching down, they're coming out now, you know, the first man is about to touch down on the earth, the surface of the moon with his feet. And of course my mother was she said she was occupied with trying to watch, some kind of television show And she didn't really care. She thought it was just too long and boring. I was like, oh, man. Here I am trying to put myself into the shoes of my parents, and and I know at least one of them didn't give a fuck. So, the Cold War. Oh, let me just go back here. It was an anxious nation that had watched and listened that February morning as Mr. Glenn, 40 years old, a Marine Corps test pilot, and one of seven original American astronauts, climbed into Friendship 7, the tiny Mercury capsule atop an Atlas rocket rising from the concrete flats of Cape Canaveral in Florida. The Cold War had long stoked fears of nuclear destruction, and the Russians seemed to be winning the contest with their unsettling ascent into outer space. Two Russians, Yuri Gagarin and Yuri Gagarin, had already orbited Earth the year before, overshadowing the feats of two Americans, Alan B. Shepard and Virgil Grissom, who had been launched into separate missions only to the fringes of space. What the people asked with rising urgency had happened in the United States vaunted what had happened to the United States vaunted technology and can-do spirit? The answer came at 9:47 a.m. Eastern Time, when after weeks of delays, the rocket achieved liftoff. It was a short flight, just three orbits, but when Mr. Glenn was safely back, flashing the world a triumphant grin, doubts were replaced by a broad new faith that the United States could indeed hold its own against the Soviet Union in the Cold War and might someday prevail. No flyer since Lindbergh had received such a cheering welcome. Bands played. People cried with relief and joy. Mr. Glenn was invited to the White House by President John F. Kennedy and paraded up Broadway and across the land. That's another amazing part in the documentary, to watch the ticker tape parades. To watch the ticker tape parades, because we were so invested in this type of reaching out toward the stars. As a society, we were just so invested in that. And this was in the 60s, mind you, so, you know, there's a lot of tumultuous things going on in society. On the civil rights level, that was heating up, you know, especially in 1962. Big time. Big time. Oh, let's move over to this other article from the Dispatch. Hold on a second. John Glenn is and always will be Ohio's ultimate hometown hero, and his passing today is an occasion for all of us to grieve, said Ohio Governor John Kasich. Who might be, to some hopefuls out there, might be the next president of the United States if they can get all these electors to not cast their vote for Donald Trump. So, watch out, everybody. There's still a chance. As we bow our heads and share our grief with his beloved wife. Let's see. There's a part in here that I wanted to put up there. Oh, that's right. Glenn lived a Ripley's Believe It or Not life. As a Marine Corps pilot, he broke the transcontinental flight speed record before being the first American to orbit Earth in 1962. 36 years later, at age 77 in 1998, becoming the oldest man in space as a member of the seven astronaut crew to shuttle Discovery. Beast. He made that flight in his 24th and final year in the U.S. Senate, from whence he launched a short-lived bid for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1984. Along the way, Glenn became moderately wealthy from an early investment in Holiday Inns near Disney World and a stint as President Royal Crown International. So there you go. See, guys, put your money into things. Put your money into businesses like Holiday Inn before they get big, and Royal Crown. Wait, is that Royal Crown the soda? John Glenn, Royal Crown International, is that the soda? The cola? Royal Crown the liquor? No, that's Crown Royal. Not Royal Crown. RC Cola. It's RC Cola and Crown Royal liquor. Yeah, seriously. I mean, when you look at this man's life, to live to 29 years old, to live to 95 and have done all of this, my God. The only thing that you grieve is that we're not holding up those heroes. We're not looking for those heroes anymore. We're not encouraging those heroes anymore. We're encouraging the ratty packs of regressive left protesters on college campuses and those who block highways and all that stuff. Those are the people that we're giving the media time to these days, unfortunately. But John Glenn, an American hero. Here's another one. It takes us to space, and it takes us to another memorializing somebody. Now, of course, December 8th is a day that both John Lennon and a favorite over here, a big-time favorite over here, Dimebag Darrell, Darrell Abbott of Pantera, was shot and killed on stage in Ohio in 2004. I was doing a paper at the Stacks at Manhattanville College. It was probably well past midnight. I like staying there every night in the library well past midnight, just because I knew I can get work done there, and I like being around the smell of old books, to be honest. It's just awesome. It's like a real nutty smell. Smells like nuts. And I remember a buddy of mine had gotten in touch with me and said, hey man, just want to let you know, I just heard that Dimebag Darrell just got shot on stage as he was playing with Damage Plan in Columbus. And that was a horrible night, because I always wanted to share the stage with Dime. I always wanted to meet him at least. And you know, big fans of Pantera. I mean, they're probably my favorite band up there with Metallica. Metallica and Pantera. That's it. They raised me musically. So that was big. But big tip of the cap to Dime. But listen to this. John Lennon. He believed he had been abducted by aliens when he was a child. Okay, so this is coming out now. I don't know if this came out recently, but it's in light of the anniversary. This is just out by the Sun, and Gadget Doc sent me this. Beatles star, former lover, May Pang, has revealed his obsession with extraterrestrials and said he thought his abduction was the reason he felt different as a child. Maybe that's what happened to me. Maybe I was abducted. In an interview with Larry Warren from the Mayerside Anomalies Research Association, she said, he told me that more than once he suspected he had been abducted as a child back in Liverpool, and he felt that experience was responsible for making him feel different from other people for the rest of his life. Uri Geller, probably had nothing to do with the hallucinogens he was taking and all the drugs and stuff like that. I have to imagine that type of stuff, the detachment from reality and different ways of seeing reality and seeing yourself and how you fit into reality. I have to imagine that's got to enhance it a little bit. So maybe he was abducted by aliens, and maybe that did change his shit around back then. Especially if they probed him. That really changes your shit. But then when he comes back and he spends the 60s and the 70s doing his thing, hanging out with the Maharishi, then, I mean, who knows? It could be a number of things, right? All right. But let's keep reading. Uri Geller had previously revealed the star told him about another encounter with aliens. He said John told him, I was asleep in my bed with Yoko, at home, and the Dakota at the in the Dakota building, the building that he was shot outside of. And suddenly, I wasn't asleep because there was a blazing light around the door. It was shining through the cracks in the keyhole like someone was out there with searchlights or the apartment was on fire. That was what I thought, intruders or fire. I leapt out of bed, and Yoko wasn't awake at all. She was lying there like a stone, and I pulled open the door. There were these four people out there. They were like these little bug-like bug eyes with little bug mouths, and they were scuttling at me like roaches. What the fuck? You know, claiming he had not taken drugs that night. Okay, there you go. I was just about to say, once again, is this drug related? But claiming he had not taken drugs that night, he continued, "Something happened. Don't ask me what. Either I've forgotten, blocked it out, or they won't let me remember. But after a while, they weren't there, and I was just lying on the bed next to Yoko, only I was on the covers." He claimed they left a, quote, metal egg-like object in his hands, which he gave Yuri during their meeting. The singer, who was shot dead in New York 36 years ago today, also claimed he had seen a UFO in the city in August of 1974. I would like to see this metal egg-like object that he'd given Yuri. Is it in here? Ah, there's a UFO that he had drawn. See? So it has to be real. Trust me, I wish it's real. I'm not reading this in any kind of way. I want this to be real. He said, "I saw a UFO and it went down into the river, turned right at the United Nations, turned left, and then down the river. It wasn't a helicopter, and it wasn't a balloon. It was silent, it looked dark, and it had white lights." May backed up his story in her book, Loving John. She said that she was with him at the time and saw a large circular object coming toward us. So there you go. We've got our American history, we've got our space history, and then we've just got spaciness all in a row. And that's how we present you your evening entertainment on the Quite Frankly podcast. Now, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to take a really quick break. And when you look at Stephanie Evils, says, looks legit. See? No more questions. It's there. Oh, here's another thing. Brad Meyer in the chat room. If you're out there, man, you're lucky, man. You're lucky. Your letter just came. And yours is one of the last letters I haven't written yet. So there you go. And it's made out to, Quite Frankly, of the Port of Chester. So there you go. I can't wait to read it. I have not read it yet, but I had to open up to see who it was from. And you are the lucky recipient. iLock says, "Isn't Benedict Cumberbatch an alien? Looks like an alien." Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to go on a quick break here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to leave you in the loving arms of this Creed shred that I love, because I had watched Anthony had sent me a link. I forgot who had told us about it, but Scott Stapp, a couple of years ago from the band Creed, had made a song for the Florida Marlins called "Fly Marlins Fly" or something like that. And it was so embarrassing. And I'm not going to waste your time letting you listen to that, because who the hell cares? But what I did find was some of our favorite Creed shreds and this whole shred movement on YouTube, where they take bands' live performances and they overdub terrible musicianship and terrible vocals. And it's so fucking amazing, especially when they're subtle. Okay, the Muse one is hilarious. We should probably watch that one, the Muse one, especially that one Scream. But I'm going to leave you. This is a 3-minute video. We won't watch the whole thing, but I'm just taking a quick break. And when we come back from break, what are we going to watch? What are we going to do? I have a couple of things here. I have some marijuana-based articles. I have more on sex robots, how they're going to allow kinky couples enjoy raunchy threesomes without getting jealous. So that's good. Oh, no. I know what I'm doing. I know exactly what I'm going to save all the marijuana stuff for tomorrow night's Friday night stream, because that's the one that gets broadcasted across all the Facebook networks with the pro cannabis pages. They would appreciate that more. So I'm going to save all my cannabis stuff for tomorrow night when we got the big time stoner audience with us. Last time we went live, we were delivered to over 20,000 people. So that was great. But coming up next, Baby It's Cold Outside, how it's actually a song about rape. We talked about this a little bit last night, how every year now somebody goes out and puts out an article about how Baby It's Cold Outside is actually a song about rape, and every self-respecting feminist should reject it. So we're going to in a little bit. We're going to get all and joyless, because 'tis the season to be joyless. Let me get that. Baby, it's cold outside. Baby, it's rapey outside. Hold on a second. Baby, it's cold outside. I don't want the Michael Bublé one. I think this is it. Now, I like that. Didn't Dean Martin do one? Yeah, and Dean Martin and Doris Day. Oh. Oh, dear Lord.
I really can't stay. But baby, it's cold outside. Got to go. But baby, it's cold outside.
Is this the whole one?
They're just like ice. Beautiful, what's your...
This is not it. God damn it. I should have found this. What's that? No. Oh, you know what? Bing Crosby. Maybe that one will do good. Okay, that sounds good. Okay, we'll get to that. All right, everybody, enjoy Creed Shreds for about a minute or so. Let me get the screen capture perfectly placed. You're going to love this one.
All right. We're about to play some Duke it round. Let's do it. Yeah, I don't know why I'm always doing that. We're gay, oh yeah, that's right, we're gay, asshole, me, oh yeah. Now, stroke me, stroke it. You do the 5 days like, yeah, that's right. Year shit, year, hey. I real blue to prepare. Get the jerk it.
Yeah! You're watching the Zedalza Entertainment Network on ZenLive.tv.
But baby, it's cold. Oh, I've got to go away. What are we going to do? You know, Bing Crosby and Doris Day, I can't believe that that Hollywood, that we as a society allowed Bing Crosby to rape Doris Day. We were such a backward society. How did we allow Bing Crosby to just blatantly rape her in front of all of us, and we turned it into a Christmas classic? How dare we? Thank God we've righted the ship with all this communism. Here's from AffinityMagazine.us. Ready? 'Tis the season, and we all know what that means. Being inundated with the unmistakable tune of Baby, It's Cold Outside. That's right, because as soon as Thanksgiving passes, the next day, it's Baby, It's Cold Outside. Constantly for a month. Idiots. On the daily, and what it is also unmistakable are the lyrics, now considered to be extremely problematic. Extremely problematic to mentally challenged people. Okay, so please don't broad stroke the rest of us in with you and the rest in the mentally challenged, the willfully challenged. That's the worst part. So, let me see here. It highlights a woman being put in an uncomfortable, coercive situation by a man. I mean, come on. One lyric is actually, "I ought to say no, 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 sir." To which the man responds, "Mind if I move in closer?" It's mind-blowing that the world ignored lyrics like these for near 60 years that this song has been out. Well, it's not so much that the world ignored a song like this or lyrics like this, you mindless little twat. What is really amazing to me is that, especially with the lyric that you pointed out, "ought to say no, 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 sir." Ought. Do you know what "ought to" means? That I ought to? It means she knows what's expected of her. I want to stay, but I gotta go. It wouldn't be becoming of me to stay. I really want to be here with you, they're throwing each other. This entire film, this entire thing, you know, let's keep going with this for a second. Let's keep going with this again. I can go on and on. In 1944, when this song was written, marital rape wasn't an idea that crossed people's minds. Men were allowed to treat women like this, and it wasn't given a second thought. Now, to think that marital rape was a problem in 1944 and that it doesn't still happen right now in any part of the country in some kind of fashion, it's just, you know, there are bad people out there. There are bad people out there. You're never getting rid of that. You want to know where the real marital rape goes? You want to know where they're... I'll tell you one thing. They're not singing Christmas songs in the country where the real marital rape is rampant. They're not singing Christmas songs, I'll tell you that much. So, men were allowed to treat women, blah, blah, blah. But today, in 2016, more people are catching on to the issues brought up by this archaic song. One couple decided to act on it. Lydia Liza and Joshua Lemansky of Minnesota crafted their own version of the song called "It's Cold Outside," all the lyrics highlighting consent in relationships. Okay, so Lydia Liza and Josiah Lemansky, her cuckold of a boyfriend, who probably, you know, spends his nights, I don't know, you know, waxing his legs and painting his wife's toenails, you know, just being a complete pushover, wimp of a freak. Okay? Just a wimp of a person. That they spent time taking this thing and going nuts. Listen to the, you know what? Fuck the rest of the article, because they're out of their minds. And I'm glad that people in the comments are going after them too. Oh, actually, mine is one of the top comments. I said every year some ditz puts out a rape article about this song and makes a fool out of themselves. And then this guy or this woman, whoever the hell they are, Kelly Land, says, "Are you calling Will Triac, the guy who wrote this stupid article, a ditz? Or did you assume a woman wrote this article?" And then, of course, everybody jumped in and, you know, said, "Oh, well, how," and, you know, of course, my response being, "Well, no, Kelly. That's not at all. I read the author bio prior to calling him a ditz. Are you insinuating that only a woman could be a ditz? Tisk, tisk." So what you have here is you have a classic American Christmas tune where you have two people who so desperately want to spend the night together. But because of, you know, you know, overbearing. If you want to say that, oh, wow, how dare the father and the mother keep people home? If they choose to be out with their significant others, they should be able to. But even then, that is not even relative in this situation. Because what Doris Day, embodying the character of the female in this song, is really saying that, oh, she's using her father as an excuse. Oh, but my parents are going to be worried sick. It's getting so much worse out there. And oh, but I really ought to. I shouldn't. And then of course saying, okay, well maybe a half a drink.
The answer is no.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This welcome is
how
big.
How lucky that you dropped
so
in.
So nice and warm.
Look out the window at that
my
storm.
My sister will be suspicious.
Gosh, your lips look delicious.
My brother will be there at the
waves
door.
Waves upon a tropical shore.
My maiden aunt's mind is
ooh,
vicious.
Ooh, your lips are delicious.
Well, maybe just a cigarette.
Never such a blizzard before.
And there you go. The answer is no. The answer is no. But after a little bit more, okay, well, maybe just a cigarette more. She's not feeling the heat. They want to be together. But you're part, if you're looking at this from this perspective, you're part of this joyless cult. You're part of this cult that is always scrambling for something to be very, very upset about and something to be outraged over. And I feel bad for you because this is a very, very warm, cozy, magical time of year, and it can be for anybody, no matter what your religious history is. It's good. It should be a good time of year. You know, but you gotta make your own traditions, and if bitching is one of them, I guess that's as American as any. So let me see here. Let's move on to our thank yous. I don't want to screw this up and forget about that because 8 o'clock we have to get off tonight. So. Real quick. I spoke to Rob Corrado. You remember I had told you guys about a week ago, or maybe at the beginning of this week, that there was a formula, okay, an Eastern formula, that a guy should abide by in between orgasms. Well, no, in between ejaculations, okay, so that you're not completely, your chi is not wiped out and you're being able to perform at your maximum. Well, I got in touch with him today. We were talking today. And the thing here, the formula is this. It's your age times 2 divided by 10. And that's how many days before you should let your next nut loose. Okay? So in my example, I'm 31 years old. You times that by 2, it's 62. You divide that by 10, it's 6.2. So theoretically, I should be allowing myself to let one loose once every 6.2 days. Now, what does that mean? Oh, that sucks. The older you get, you have to space out your sex? No, not necessarily at all. You know, we can get into another story some other time when we have the time. Because I've got 12 minutes now. But for all you guys out there who may want to look into what this is, because you know that the jerking off, it wipes you out. It does. It takes something away. I'm telling you, there's an exchange for everything. You have to pay for everything. You're either paying in energy, or you're paying in labor, or you're paying in dollars and cents. There's always an exchange, okay? But there is a way to separate the orgasm from the ejaculation. That's what you must learn. You must unlearn what you have learned, okay, about blowing a load. You must unlearn what you've learned. We'll talk about that at a later episode. But for now, take that formula to heart. Your age times 2 divided by 10, and that's as many days you should have in between your next nut. So we'll talk about edging and male multiples and all that stuff. And when I say male multiples, I don't mean vitamins. So, on to all my bosses. Everybody, please. I'm sending out my international letters now.
to UK and France and all over the United States, to all my great friends, my partners in this show, my bosses, the supporters. You guys are what makes are what make me, you know, put all this time in. I do it for you guys, and I hope that you're getting exactly what you thought you'd get out of it. So let's start with my bosses. First of all, patreon.com/ quite frankly. Check out what I have for you there. The letter writing positions are evaporating. There's only like five left. Michael Wells, Matt Smith, Rudy Escarcega, Matt DeFabio, Brad Meyer, Nikki Solis, Sean Collins, Jackie Milam, Stephanie K from StephanieKBeauty.com, goddammit. Andrew Great Dame, Christian Peppas of the Amatory Murder, Jenny Lee, Kate McCallum, Laura Veris, Max Ancaparato, Eric Reitz, Brian Gadgetock O'Connor Jr., Marianne Hart, Perry and Stacy Little, Rob Corrado, Whitney McShann, Bren Antilles, Antilles of Rogue Squadron. I have to talk about that at another time, too. Mike did something very, very nice for me. Mike, my brother over here, I can call him a best friend, but he's more than that. He's pretty much the third son. He's me, Anthony. It's me, Anthony, and Mike. That's what it's been. You know, he's my mother's third son. It just happens that way. Mike went and he got me a Christmas present. And I'm going to find a way to pay him back in some way. It'll be direct or indirect. Something that'll appease me. And so I know that I exchanged something with him. But he went and he got me the season pass for Star Wars after PlayStation rooked me and fucked me in the ass and took away all of my access to the DLCs. So I will be able to play the new Star Wars Battlefront DLCs tonight, the Scarif, the Rogue One one. So thank you so much, Mike. Merry Christmas to all. To all, good night. Mike May, the creator of the new intro, L.S. Dan. L.S. Dan was actually the reason why John Lennon went and hallucinated all those. Although, no, he believes that he was abducted. It was L.S. Dan's problem. He did it. And, of course, Pierre. Pierre, I know that you wanted to call in and get me to say your entire name, and I want to be able to say it. So, by all means, it's 7:52. I've got six and a half minutes left. Pierre, if you want to call in right now and say your name, and I will try to say it, by all means, please do it. By all... please. And a shout-out to all of our other friends in the chat room that we always see every night. Stephanie Evil, iLox. It's great to just work alongside of people like Stephanie Evil. She's a great writer for Gaslight.tv. There's a new articles out for Gaslight.tv the last couple of days. Check it out. We've also added a podcast section to Gaslight.tv. So all of the Quite Frankly full episodes and also all the Quite Frankly highlights and interviews, those playlists are there. And also, as we get more contributions from some of our writers, maybe from some of you guys, I always say that people like Max Ancaparato, they want to do some kind of a futurism vlog or something like that. I'd love to host that stuff. Even if they want to make their own channels, cool, but I would make another playlist and get that on the site too. I really want to exploit and put out there all of you guys and your fantastic insight and expertise. So there's going to be that. Always new stuff coming out. We never stand still. Let me see. Pierre, it'll take him about a month, but he'll say it right eventually. What did Pierre say? Listen, I don't discount me. Don't discount my ability to say something foreign. Pierre says, no, it was just a joke. Don't take what I said seriously. I am taking it seriously. I actually would like to. You know? And depending on how many of we should have a multilingual audience, big time. Gadgetock knows a few languages himself. Evie, do you speak Spanish? Obviously, Pierre speaks French. How many languages do we have in the chat room? Last thing I want to do before I get off at 7:55. So Evie speaks Spanish. Okay, good. Because we need all types of language and translators, all that stuff. We need to be able to do the news in more than one way. So Evie, there may be a time. First of all, I would love you for you guys to call in. Oh, Stephanie speaks Italian. I have been learning and trying to learn Italian for years, Stephanie. I've been teaching myself. We got the Rosetta Stone. I actually hired a private teacher in high school because I wanted to learn, even though I was taking Spanish in high school. I was taking Italian on the side. I just want to be able to be dropped in the middle of Italy and be able to get myself from point A to point B and build off of that. So by all means, inundate me with new languages, guys. Pierre says, I'm starting to learn German. I tried learning Slovenian. That's cool. Well, we're a nice bunch. I like it. All right, guys. So remember your jerk-off formula. Aside from that, great honor to all those who served and who lost their lives at Pearl Harbor and those who survived. Great honor to John Glenn. Check out the 60s, the Space Race episode. And keep your doors locked at night. Stay away from the light that comes through the keyhole. We'll see you guys tomorrow night on this show. It'll be on Facebook, so make sure you go and you like the Quite Frankly Facebook fan page. And for those of you who don't have Facebook, not to worry. New technology is coming in. We're going to be able to simulcast on YouTube and Facebook at the same time. So sooner than later, there's going to be no reason to stop and break consistency on either platform. So thank you so much for putting up with the choppy schedule for now. But onward and upward into 2017. All right, guys. You are the best. See y'all soon.